Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. And as we do every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I am spectacular. How are you guys?
We are also spectacular, even more so now that you are with us. Corey, it's there's true. A lot going on right now, and obviously – that one was about as tough as it gets last night in terms of a gut punch loss for the Nashville Predators. You were there. You saw it. What did you make of the way that one ended last night and just the utter disaster in the last 4 minutes of game time for the Predators?
Well, gut punch doesn't cover it. It's a groin kick.
Oh, yeah.
All right. It's like that dude in the GIF who just stands there and takes shot after shot after shot.
Cup doesn't matter for this one.
Does not.
No,
doesn't help.
There's not a cup big enough or strong enough or a rushing nesting doll cup version that covers this one. This is bad. I mean, it's not just losing a game. You handed away the series. I mean, that's what you did. You had a chance to go back 2-2. It's a best of three. You've been a good road team. You know, you got a shot, and now you're down 3-1. And you're down 3-1 really having – could have very well been up 3-1.
Yep.
So, I mean, you're looking in the mirror saying, what have we done? What have we done? And I get what they say that, well, we were good for this and we were good for that, and so we feel good about our game. And Rick Tocchet was very complimentary and, you know, tough on his team because he knows they've been largely outplayed. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is when it comes down to go time, when you need a goal, when you need a stop, one team is getting it and one team is not.
So we've been talking about the historical, a lot of us were talking about last night, you know, where this would rank among the worst. And obviously there's, you know, Robbie brought up the 2010 in particular, 2015 game one, I think was awful too, but 2010, that's the Hosa
game
goal,
five
right?
In Chicago. Hosa,
game five,
yeah.
Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that when you've seen, not shot the puck when he didn't need to?
I believe that was E-Rat. Yep. E-Rat.
It was E-Rat.
Chopped it
he
in
was
there,
at the game last night. I talked to him between periods.
Nice.
Yeah. Stay with his kids. It was good.
Did you see him afterward and ask him if this was worse than his?
No, I did not. We had a nice moment. Marty and I didn't have any nice moments. That was a nice moment. So we just stuck with that.
Well, how's this one going to be remembered, Corey? Years later.
You know, this is an all-timer. I'm old, so they all start to run together. But I don't remember one with this much at stake that was just such a complete collapse. And you know, you're talking back at 2010, you know, the Preds hadn't established any kind of expectations.
Correct.
You know, and now there are expectations. And, you know, you were just excited to be beating Chicago at that point. You know, in this one, you know, you watch your team, I mean, really throttle Vancouver pretty much for 55. How many shots did they have at that point? 12 or 16 or something? I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, they were just completely smothered. They could not get any offense generated. And then just to hand it, I mean, you know, the first 6-on-5 goal was beautiful. I mean, it was really, really, really well constructed. And then, you know, I understand why Coach Burnett is cutting Colton slack, cutting Colton Sisson slack, and I know a lot of people are. But I can't, because is he in the NHL? Is it the greatest hockey league in the world? Does he make millions of dollars to play hockey and put that puck in the net? The answer to all those questions are yes. He has to make that play. Is it a tougher play than just hitting an empty net? Yes, it is. But again, he's a player paid millions of dollars in the best hockey league in the world. He needs to make that play and end that game. I don't hate Colton Sissons. I like Colton Sissons. He's had a great year. He's been a really solid player for this team, but we all know that puck needed to be in the net. And so, you know, if you do that, then the last 6 seconds don't matter. Then it's over. But I don't know about you guys. I think they set up that box with about 26 seconds to go or 20 seconds to go. And as soon as I saw that set up, I went, oh, boy. You could just see it coming. I'm like, this is trouble. and then there it was. And they finished. I mean, look at the shot that guy made to win the game.
Yeah.
That was a
great play.
Was he laying down?
Yeah. I mean, he was basically falling away from the goal. And it was a great play by Besser. Yeah. Great play.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
And he put it on the net. He beat the goalie to put it in the net. And, yes, he's a great player. But, again, Colton Sissons is a good player and the best player in the best league in the world. Needs to be in the net.
So, Corey, let me ask you this, because, you know, obviously, the series is not officially over. It kind of feels that way after last night that you're down 3-1. But let's say that it comes to an end here, whether it's Game 5, Game 6, whenever it is. You know, I think everybody would agree this Predators team has overachieved this year. I also look at their roster right now, and it's not that young. I mean, they got a lot of old guys, a lot of veteran guys on their roster right now. So what's your prevailing takeaway, if it ends here, of – what to make of this year and the fact that they did overachieve, but also where they go from here?
Well, I think it's a really good year with proof of product and concept that, you know, Barry knows what he's doing and Andrew Burnett's a really good coach. I think, you know, those two things were shown. I think they've shown their best players can function in this system with this coach. And so I think those things are also very good. I see fans still chiming in about, well, we only got hot for 18 games, and if we didn't make the playoffs, we'd be picking higher. And that's mind numbing to me. It just is. You go to the playoffs when you go to the playoffs, and you see what can happen. It's that simple. Because you never know what's going to happen. The freaking LA Kings got in on the last day and won the cup. All right, so. I don't bemoan that. We knew they could play well in this series and lose, which is largely what's happened, okay? Because Vancouver's got a ton of talent. They're the 2 seed, all right? And the 2 seed's supposed to beat the 7 seed. Now, you'd like to not give it away in the last 2 minutes, but, you know, the outcome here, the 3-1, shouldn't be a shocker to everyone.
Yeah, the whole idea of, you know, they should have just stunk, you know.
Now, look, guys, I'm never going to get on board with that for any team. No. I'm never going to do it.
No. So, Corey, I do want to get your thoughts. Give me your biggest take of the Titans draft. If you have one thing that stands out above all others, and I know you're probably just, you know, you're already, you know, imagining Caleb Williams or Roma Dunze, but put your mind on the Titans for a moment.
Well, I'm not just imagining that. I'm also imagining DJ Moore and Keenan Allen.
Oh, right. Yes.
So, you know, we've got more than one player now. Nice. Look, it's funny because, you know, what do they always say? You know, you do free agency for need and you draft for foundation. They filled need with every one of their picks. So it was just a matter of, you know, we see where they prioritized their needs. Left tackle, defensive line, linebacker, return game. I mean, they were filling needs each step of the way. And so it's interesting. And I also think it's interesting that, you know, it's clear they like their guys. They're not worried about what anybody else thinks. They find their guys and they pick them, and we'll see if they're right or if they're wrong on who those guys were. I also thought it was interesting because before the draft, I asked Brian Callahan about the sheer size of the guys they had coming in for top 30s. And he brushed it off like it was nothing. And then he comes out there, you know, Thursday and Friday, and he's like, these guys are huge. It's incredible. It's by design. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of what I was asking about the other day. I know they can't give it away, but I was like, man, he just pooped all over my question. Not, he doesn't poop over it. He's a really nice guy, but he glossed over it. And yeah, it was interesting that they wanted to get bigger. I haven't heard that from this team very often, but they got bigger. I'm a little concerned there's enough fabric to make those actual uniforms, but we'll find out.
Corey, last thing for you here. How important is it in your mind that J.C. Latham plays left tackle? Not right tackle, left tackle. How important is that in your mind?
I think, you know, it is the foundational piece on the offensive line, and he's the 7th pick of the draft. And it also speaks to their scouting process. So I think those things all make it important because if he can't do the left tackle, it means they were wrong. All right. And you know, you want him to be right. We've seen enough wrong the last 4 years in the draft. We need to see some big right. And, you know, it's Will Levis's blind side. And if he can't play the left side, you know what that means? It means Levis took a beating this year. And he can't take a beating again. All right? He needs to be better. I think it's important. I think it's very important that, you know, Sasquatch gets it done.
Corey, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you next week.
By the way, extremely likable guy, too. I mean,
yeah.
Just, you know, nice to meet. And they weren't lying about those hands. They are they are bear claws. I mean, just absolute meat hooks.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, big dude. Thanks, Corey.
All right. You guys go ahead and rant the rest of the day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Pretty much.
Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. We'll react to what Corey had to say there. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Overall, the first 57 minutes of the game, though, looked like a much better effort, even from game three. Is that what you saw out there, too?
I mean, I liked our game three. I really liked our third period, being up two goals. You know, you felt comfortable. I thought we were really digging. Everybody's pulling the rope. You know, I think we've gotten better as the series has moved along. So that's why it's a little disappointing that you don't get rewarded for it. But usually when you do the things we've been doing, if we can, you know, clear our mind and go back to work, the hockey gods may give you a little bit of a break here, because I thought we did a lot of good things in both these home games that we probably should have at least won one, maybe two.
That was Andrew Brunette yesterday, taking your thoughts on the Pred, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. I got some tickets to give away. A four-pack of tickets to see the Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides at First Horizon Park this Thursday. Big caller 5-615-737-1025 is our phone number. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Tim. Tim, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning. I appreciate y'all taking my call. So I was going to weigh in on this Nashville Predators talk. Y'all said that y'all didn't really want to blame Coach Bruno a little bit, and I was wondering how y'all thought about how he couldn't be to blame whenever the last month they've been, you know, pretty hot starting off in the game, but then they can't never close. It's hard for them to close the game out. I know some, you know, they got some points out of it, but still they can't get the win. So I'm going to hang up and let y'all weigh in on that. I'll listen to you.
Well, I think down the stretch it was the exact opposite of that. I think down the stretch they started out slow and then got going as the game went on. And had some later efforts there. Like the last 2 weeks of the regular season, I didn't think they started games off very well at all. And they ended up recovering after that.
Right. It was more the first periods that were their issues. But early in the season, that was true. Look, with Brunette, I mean, anything big picture, you know, if there's a failure and it's not addressed, I mean, if you want to blame Andrew Brunette or something, the power play has been terrible in this postseason, and he's a power play guy. So, I mean, there's big picture things that you can say could be better, but if you want to go really big picture, this team isn't supposed to be here. It is playing a team that is more talented and certainly much stronger down the middle. And so, you know, this has been an encouraging and overachieving debut season.
Well, the other part of this, like, I think he deserves credit for – they have clearly made some adjustments – from game two on that have led to better opportunities 5-on-5. It's not just as simple as, well, they've been at home and they've had last chance. Like Rick Tocchet has talked about this. Brunette has changed some things through the neutral zone in terms of them getting through that are causing Vancouver a lot of issues right now. So you've seen some X's and O's on the fly changes that he's made that I think have worked out really well. Now, the problem with that is they still have not finished to the degree in which you hope they finish, particularly against a second and third string goalie. Now, Vancouver's got some gigantic defensemen, and it's really difficult to get to the inside. But I think Brunette, from an X's and O's standpoint, has actually done a pretty good job here. The one part where it's just been killer is the power play. They've had some opportunities on the power play that they just have not been able to take advantage of. And it's not everything in the playoffs, but it can't be 1-for-15 or whatever they are right now in the series. Like, you can't win that way.
Right. By the way, the officials yesterday called a weak penalty on Forsberg, called a weaker penalty as a makeup call, and then just let them beat the crap out of each other for the rest of the game and just never called anything else. So.
Just said, you know what? Swallowing the whistle.
Like the Lausanne, get a little forearm shivering on Pettersson in the goal celebration.
Yeah, and, you know, Lausanne took another penalty later in the game where they gave him like the first three cross checks, and then by like the fourth, and I was like, dude, all right.
You got
to. We're going to have to call it.
Is that Garland?
I think so.
Yeah, little Connor Garland over there. Yeah, but look, with Brunetta, it's just. I guess if your team makes mistakes and blows games, and sure, I mean, anything goes on the coach. Any success or failure goes on the coach, but I don't see coaching mistakes here.
No. I mean, look, it's – could there be things that they do better tactically 6-on-5? Probably so. Like, they got to find a way to you can't – I know that it's an advantage. And 6-on-5, teams are throwing everything at the net. It's hard to defend. You can't give up two goals on the 6-on-5. Like, it cannot happen. So are there better things that you can do tactically there? I'm sure there are. Are the power, like, it's not been perfect from Brunette, no question about it. But I, the larger picture, if you're looking at this thing from a 30,000-foot view, I don't know how you couldn't be pretty excited if you're a Predators fan about what we've seen from Brunette, the big picture this year.
Yes. Now, concerned about the lineup, the roster, the lack of young guys who are pushing to be part of this team in years to come, there's where
exactly.
I think you need to be more concerned.
Well, and let me ask you this. Let's say this series ends tomorrow and they're done in five. I would describe the series for Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi as okay. Not great, but okay. And those are your two foundational pieces. And I do think one of the questions that will come up is, can you actually compete for a championship with those two being your foundational pieces? Like, Forsberg's a great player. He scored 48 goals this year. Josi's obviously a great player. It's not been great for them in this series. I thought Josi got better yesterday. Before that goal that he created in the third period, I think Vancouver's done a fantastic job of totally neutralizing him in this series.
Well, I think that my quick answer is, well, they can't be the only part of it, you know. I mean, you know, another thing that I think we do see, we talked earlier in the show about, like, the absence of high-paid goalies. Mm-hmm. And also, I think you're seeing, like, some of these teams, yeah, some of them have the absolute star power at the very top. We'll see what Edmonton does here. But also you see teams with more depth. I mean, I really like Vancouver. If they had their goalie, I think Vancouver could really do something in this tournament.
I do, too.
You know, and to have three centers the way they do and the depth of the – so, like, my answer is, like, you have to put a lot more around them, you know. And
that's fair.
And, again, it's the time – like, and ideally, at least one of those pieces also be like, oh, that's also a foundational piece. Now, who that is, I don't know. I can't tell you. It's a tough one. Is it someone that you – a veteran who's proven – you know, we talked about Tkachuk a couple summers ago. He's awfully good in the postseason.
He is. It's somebody they clearly don't have right now.
Yeah, or is it someone who you have coming up in the system who I just don't know. I think they have some – I mean, like, I like some of these guys and what they're going to be, but do they have anybody who's going to be great?
Right. It's a big question. And, again, I said this earlier, but, I mean, look around the league right now. Vegas last year, Vegas has got a lot of good things, right? They got Eichel, they got Stone, they got a lot of good stuff. One thing they also have is big mobile defensemen. Vancouver has big mobile defensemen. Boston, big mobile defensemen. And everybody wants those guys. They're hard to find. Like, everybody wants somebody that's 6'5" and can move. I mean, you know, Floyd Reese used to say it. When you're big and fast, that's a pretty good combination. Doesn't really matter what the sport is. But, like, one thing about this defense core, Shen's good size. McDonough's got some decent size to him. And beyond that, I mean, you're looking around. Carrier, not the biggest guy. Fabro, not the biggest guy. Certainly Tyson Berry, not the biggest guy.
Josi's
not the biggest guy.
Speed with Stastny.
Stastny's not the biggest guy. I mean, you've got some speed there, but, you know, the way your defense core is structured, how happy are you with that moving forward? I mean, it's clearly been very difficult in this series, with the exception of yesterday, because I thought they did a better job yesterday. But it's been pretty difficult in this series for the Predators to get to the middle with how big Vancouver is.
Right, and it's not as hard the other way. It's when you bring that up, and it's not the same thing. It's not a big Z, but Think about at Coleman Subban yep. and what they were as a shutdown pair, and how basically every time Lavi, they were his matchup, defensive matchup pairing yep. in that run.
Yeah, I mean it's you know,
and they aren't huge. World. They aren't huge, but they're big, physical, and they can move.
So what we discovered then. Is if you could find a Not number now. One center, some gigantic defenseman that can also skate really well. And a couple more scoring forwards, you'd be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and a better coach.
Good Preds, yeah. Scotty Bowman.
There you go. Yeah. Scotty Bowman, stop playing Glorious Domination. We're figuring this out.
Again, like I said, we've gotten a lot of questions about the offseason today, and I get it. There's plenty
we've
of time.
We've got
for
time.
That. There's plenty of time for that discussion. Plenty of time.
Yeah, once they win Tuesday. Yeah, well, we'll start talking about something else.
I'm going to head over to Predators availability. They're flying out to Vancouver here in about 30 minutes. So I'm going to go do some interviews over there. You guys are going to hold down the fort. Teresa Walker coming up next. So we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Prediction on who's available.
I will go
Ryan
O'Reilly.
Okay.
I'll go McDonough and Cole Smith.
Ryan O'Reilly is going to ask to be available so he can blame himself for everything bad that's ever happened in Predators franchise history.
He might do that. There's no question.
He has a little bit of a point today.
Teresa Walker coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
And welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie has headed out to the airport to grab the Preds before their early flight here to Vancouver. But I guess that's probably a good thing. Get that out of the way early, get some rest, and get reacclimated to Vancouver. In the meantime, we are happy to welcome in our next guest, Teresa Walker, Associated Press, a veritable Nashville media legend and someone I've spent a lot of time with this past weekend. Teresa, how you doing?
I am good. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm doing fine.
Or should I tone it down?
What's that?
Or should I tone it down?
What? Tone it down on how you're feeling?
No. Am I being too loud?
Oh. No, you're good. You're good. And,
okay.
Glad to hear you're doing well. It's been at least a few hours since we last saw each other.
a couple minutes.
So first of all, yeah, this is a tough question, but try to sum up the entire weekend here. And obviously, there have been other weekends in the past where you got hockey playoffs and NFL draft together, but the highs, lows, in-betweens of this past weekend for you, how do you sum it all up?
Joe, I'll just say this. I'm very grateful that the Memphis Grizzlies are not in the playoffs this year because it would probably have killed me because – yes, I mean, the way the timing went down, thanks to Tim McGraw for playing on Thursday night, that allowed me to be at the Titans on, you know, for their first pick, and I mean, we all know what a revolving door traffic cone left tackle has been for this team. Very curious to see what Bill Callahan, the O-line guru, does with J.C. Latham. And then over to, you know, to the arena for hockey all day on Friday from morning skate to the game that night, and Casey DeSmith gets his first postseason playoff game win. Then we have the long day in tonight that is the final day of the NFL draft. And then yesterday, I mean, I just saw in the NHL stat pack this morning that the Canucks are like the second team to do what they did last night. So if it hurts this morning, that's why. It's like a literal gut punch. I mean, And I'm just going to say this. You've got a two-goal lead. They've pulled the goalie. They've got the extra attacker. Build a wall around the net. Quit, you know, clear the puck. The post that Sissons hit, Andrew Brunette made it clear. That was a tough angle. He had a defender on him. I mean, you know, would it have been nice if he had been able to put that in? Yes. But maybe, just defend the net and don't let another puck in and help your goalie out. Instead of maybe chasing the puck and looking like a peewee soccer team.
Yeah, well, no, don't let Brock Besser just drift alone all night like he's in Wonder Woman's airplane. That's that was confusing for me how he was so alone so many times to score a huge goal. So I asked Corey Curtis this earlier. I got to ask all the old heads who have been around for all of these things. Is this the worst loss in Predators history?
Well, it's certainly the first one in playoff history where they blew a 2 goal or more lead in the third period. So there, that kind of in a way stands on its own. But for me, I'm going to put it second to the Game 6 in the Stanley Cup Final, because one stage, Game 6, only one guy in the entire building didn't see the puck go over the net, and he whistled the play dead, killing off, you know, what would have, could have, should have been a tying goal, maybe giving the Predators a chance to force a Game 7 back in Pittsburgh. So I'm still keeping that at the top of the list. And it's funny, I did have somebody, our buddy Chip Cirillo, texted me this morning and asked me kind of the same thing. And that's my answer. That, because of the stage, this is second right now. Why? Because it's the first time they've ever done that.
I hear that. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of like how you judge it, too. It's like, you know, the collapse factor, that element is, because a lot of people brought up a couple of those Chicago Blackhawks losses in 15 and 2010. But certainly, like you said, I mean, to see the other team celebrate, you know, skate around with the cup on your ice and the intent to blow play and all that stuff, I mean, that was certainly a devastating one. Do you think this series is over, Teresa?
It kind of feels like it, right? I mean, when the Canucks do something that only the Canucks have done before, and that's win 3 games with 3 different goaltenders to take a 3-1, you know, I mean, that's the thing. You know, Arthur's and Sirov, however you say his name, you know, this is a guy whose best, biggest stage at this point to his career before last night had been on the World Championships playing for Latvia, his home country. And suddenly he's on the ice unexpectedly, and he said that after the game he was told Saturday, so he had a little bit of time to prep for it. But Casey Smith gets his first win on Friday night, and then Arthur's comes in on Sunday and gets his and makes 27 saves, if NHL stats hasn't changed that stat this morning by now. Sometimes they do that. But, I mean, that's the thing. You know, pepper this guy with pucks. Push him a little bit harder early. And, you know, it was like after the hit on, you know, McCarron's hit on DeSmith. You know, you've just rattled the goaltender, taking a penalty. We'll get some more pucks on him. You know, force the issue a little bit more. So I'm really curious. It feels over to me. If there's a Game 6 on Friday night in Nashville, I'll be surprised. I'll admit it. It feels like it's over. The Canucks don't want to make that flight back here again. They've made that very clear. And it's just, you know, Andrew Burnett, give him credit. After the game, you know, he's like, I've come back from, you know, as a player a couple times from being down 3-1. And as a Cubs fan, I remember the Chicago Cubs in 2016 coming back from 3-1 in the World Series. That's the year that Cleveland came back from a 3-1 deficit to a team that we thought was pretty unbeatable in the Warriors. So can it be done? Yes. Do I think it'll be done? No.
I'm with you. All right, let's switch back to the Titans. Any themes that stand out to you about the entirety of the draft class, Teresa?
Big size, speed, and popping guys. I mean, you watching the guy that they took from Miami – I mean, he has a 0 to 120 gear.
His film's actually pretty wild.
It is. I mean, Gentry pulled it up, and I'm watching it, and it's like this guy could be 5 feet from somebody and just level him. So that's a good thing. I mean, now we'll see what, you know, it seems like they want him to play at linebacker, and he certainly has the size. He's a bit of a tweener, and I certainly remember back in the day when they called Javon Kurse a tweener. And, you know, he was a guy that nobody knew what to do with. And, you know, he turned out pretty good for the Titans. And, yes, this is a 7th-round pick, but, you know, he's got the NFL, you know, pedigree. His dad played 8 years in the league. So, you know, this is a guy, and he played at Miami. So, you know, this is somebody who's played at a big school. And, you know, Colton Dowell, the 7th-round pick a year ago, no offense, but coming from an FCS school at Martin, you know, there is a difference when you're taking a player in the 7th round from a Power, what is it now? Power 4 league, I guess. The last stages of the Power 5. But and certainly, you know, they got some guys with chips on their shoulder. You know, Jarvis Brownlee, you know, he sounds like a guy who, if you're patterning your game after like L'Jarius Sneed, now you get to come sit in a room and learn from him, you know, being coached by a guy, Steven Jackson. I'm curious to see how some of these young men turn out. I'll say this. This should be a draft class that contributes early, and that would be a nice change, because this is a franchise that the setbacks that they've dealt with the last 2 years is because of so many draft hits and misses, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, they're going to have to, a lot of them are going to have to contribute early without question. What's your biggest concern position group remaining now for the Titans after basically all the acquisitions are done? They're going to do more during camp and things like that. For the most part, though, it's set.
Yes, I think they've got to go get a safety. It sounds like they're getting some tight ends. The announcement just hadn't been made yet. And I'm curious to see if they add a tight end with experience to that group, or if they count on Chigakonkwo and Josh Wiley growing and developing at this point. But I'm really curious to just see. I think safety, tight end, and do they get another guy with some experience on offensive line, or do they tell Bill Callahan, okay, we've given you these guys, nice combo of youth and and experience, and go make us an offensive line. They certainly have rebuilt the left side from center to left. If J.C. Latham is that guy and can hold that spot, and with Bill Callahan's history, I'm going to give him the credit, plus the fact that, he played tight end in high school, left tackle in high school, and at Alabama under Nick Saban, he may not have played left tackle in a game, but he certainly crossed training, so to speak, going left and right. He just happened to play right tackle while I was at Alabama. Alabama's got a pretty good track record of quality offensive linemen, just not with this franchise. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and see what this new coaching staff and can do with this team.
Teresa Walker, Associated Press, joining us. Last thing, Teresa. Kaharski, had some complaints about you. He expressed them on a podcast with me and Andrew, young Andrew. I'm just wondering, any message you want me to pass along to PK when he comes in this week?
Well, two things. If he's calling somebody unhinged and unbearable, take a look in the mirror, Chief. And then secondly, he's not the media ombudsman, and certainly the third day of the draft, it's loud. It always is because we're killing time between picks and the day goes forever. And he was the guy that was he had the fastest 10-yard shuttle time to the cupcakes on Thursday night. So, the guy who was complaining about the food because they had healthy choices. And I'm sorry, Chief, that I need some gluten-free food. Sorry. But, he had plenty of food to eat from.
I love it. You still kept it classy, but I like that.
Yeah, smoke weed constantly.
That's our favorite drop now. Teresa, glad you got that in. We will pass that along and continue to get after him here too. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, because yes, none of us have had much sleep in the last few days, have we?
That's right. Teresa Walker, Associated Press. Appreciate her coming on. We'll be back last segment. Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Final segment here. Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. I'm Joe Rex. Robbie Stanley is heading over to talk to the Nashville Predators before they depart for Vancouver to play an elimination game tomorrow night. That is 9 p.m., by the way. Local time, and of course, if the Preds manage to win that, they will get another home game at Bridgestone Arena Friday night. Don't know a time on that yet, and we won't have a time on that unless it actually happens, I think, Tuesday night. And as of early evening Sunday, it was basically a lock that game was going to happen. And looked kind of like the Preds might be playing to move on in that game instead. It very well may not happen. Nick Kieser, you've got takes on this game.
Yeah,
You've got a chance to give us some. So, first of all, I watched the video again. I mean, I've watched these three goals in the last 3 minutes, 51 seconds, which includes 62 seconds of overtime, over and over again to try to get a feel for who the heck screwed things up. And it's always hard to figure that out. But you have a very different thought on the winning goal in overtime.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of different areas, I think, that went awry. Don't get me wrong. There were plenty of gaffes, I think, in that overtime in the 1 minute that we actually got to watch. But I think, look, it was a weird It was a weird play in terms of McDonough on that wall. I think it was Dakota Joshua that he was making a play on for that hit. And quite frankly, I thought if McDonough finishes his hit there, if the stick is against the wall, that puck doesn't get all the way around to Garland, and Garland doesn't make the pass into the slot. And look, I get it. If we live in a perfect world, that possibly could have happened, and puck was moving pretty fast and quicker than anybody could have possibly have read in a play like that where he sees someone's back, because you don't want to cross-check him there. You don't want to get a penalty, right? But I thought, looking back at it, and maybe Ryan would think this as well, and if Robbie's prediction is right, he'd be a good guy to talk to, because it's what did you see in that one corner play there. But I thought maybe if he had finished that check, not like forcefully like laying him out, but just if he had pinned him against the wall, cut off that lane, I think things could possibly look different, Joe.
Well, you may be right, but what he did, that part of the play happens, right?
Yeah,
sometimes
yeah.
you know, win a puck battle sometimes. But the bottom line is there's no one in front of that.
No.
So the mistake was
O'Reilly.
The mistake, or yeah, but that's the thing. I watch it over and over. O'Reilly and Forsberg got crossed up. They miscommunicated, and one of them had to be there. Well, both of them are way out high, and it's just an absolute gimme.
Yeah, it is. So, it's a gimme, but should Forsberg be below the circle? You know what I mean? Like, if he's picking up on Lindholm in the slot and he's floating around, where are his eyes? You know, that's
right.
Well,
I mean,
that's
the thing. Both of them are out. So I mean, one of them obviously has to be.
Yeah, it was a bad read.
Not there. So it was a miscommunication. That was a big mistake. I really think the tying goal.
That was the one that killed him.
It was the one where I have a hard time actually finding fault, just because Yossi and O'Reilly both hit the ground. You get a partial block on JT Miller, and then it's all chaos.
Yeah,
right?
It is chaos.
But Besser, the Besser goal before that, I think it was O'Reilly too. I mean, from what I'm watching that play, and they just lose track of Besser. I mean, he's a 40-goal scorer this year. I mean, it's not like he's. It's amazing to me that, especially his first two goals, he could be left alone the way he was. Do you think this series is over?
Do I think it's over? It feels over. I think it's going to be really tough to get a couple of goals in Vancouver. I really do. It doesn't matter. I don't think Seeloves and DeSmith are too different of goaltenders, to be frank. I thought that last night Seeloves did a better job controlling rebounds than DeSmith did. I would not be shocked if Arturs is back in and plays in game five, and that would be his second career playoff game. And to his credit, he stepped up during the regular season times that he's been called up. I think he's lost twice, maybe something like that. He actually has a win against Nashville as well from last March, I want to say. Not that that matters, but he has seen Nashville twice now. So I'm sure he feels comfortable. He knows that that's why he feels comfortable as well. He said that last night after his win. But Joe, I do think it's over. I think they go to Vancouver. I think they make it competitive. Could they dunk a few early and sit on it like they did in game two? Maybe, but I find it highly unlikely. You got Besser going. Lindholm is feeling himself now. It's going to be extremely difficult to keep their best players off the board, I feel like.
By the way, Kaharski on the text line driven by WilsonConnect.com has you know, put forth his little response to Therese. I don't have time to deal with it. We can deal with all that later. I mean, Kaharski, you know, he shames people for things that he also does, but, you know, we can let him defend himself, I guess, on Wednesday. Would you change the lineup in any significant way? Would you do, Robbie mentioned earlier in the show, Tommy Novak has not been effective in the series at all. Parson has been called up. Would you make that switch?
I think I would think about it. And if we ask Brunette here in the next few minutes about that, I think he'll say he'll think about it.
Yeah,
if I'm the coach, I tell Parson and he's in, because I feel like the way that Novak has played, has he held onto the puck well at times? Yeah, absolutely. But what good has he done overall? Like, how has he changed his line dramatically? I don't think it's been very much whatsoever. I mean, last night, I thought he made some decent reads. I didn't think he was the smartest decision maker on the ice. I thought Evangelista had to make up for those gaps, quite frankly, on the rush or trying to find his man. And I think if Parsonen comes in, he makes a difference, Joe. I really do. I think if he comes in and plays even the wing and Jankowski fills in on that center, you know, that might actually look better, and they shift a little bit of things around. Things could look different for Nashville, I think, on Tuesday evening.
Alex from Nashville says, first line non-existent. Well, Nyquist had a goal on a two-on-one with Forsberg. Perfect. And then Forsberg scored, you know, the goal to put them up 3-1. So it's not non-existent. They could do more. The Preds are going to have to do – somebody is going to have to step up and do something incredible, I think, for them to extend their series. In the meantime, we'll be back tomorrow. Right now, it's time for Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.